hour number three. And if you scroll on the right-hand side column all the way down, you'll find in green text, exclusive, UFO ET disclosure section. Listen to these radio programs below, revealing stunning UFO ET data. And William Tompkins is right there first. You'll see all Bill's programs for your listening enjoyment anytime you'd like. You'll also find other materials right below where the radio programs end. And you'll find Clark McClellan's special section with his most recent programs from 2012 onward. And we hope to have Clark back on the air very soon. At some point, we'd like to have him on with Bill Tompkins. That would be a great program. And in the Clark McClellan box, you'll find information about the Kecksburg crash. You can see that right there. There's a green Deglaca and a color picture of the bell. You can listen to that one. There's just a lot of material there. You can take a look and enjoy. Below that, Herbert Dorsey, then Jim Oglesby, and then Astonishing Secret German World War II Technology. There are four entries under that heading, Astonishing Secret German World War II Technology. The first one is the Flying Disc Program. And in that is a piece of film, black and white film, which we've had enhanced by my video editor. James has put all the pictures we've gotten from Frank Chile in there of these discs, black and white pictures. They're quite interesting. And then the second one is specifically about Germany's Deglaca. And you'll be able to look at the pictures of that. It's a fascinating survey. Third one is Germany's Antarctic exploration. What did they find? And I've always said, what did they find that they didn't tell us? That's another aspect of it. The fourth entry is Mysterious German World War II Concrete Rings. What the hell were these things? They're made of concrete. They look like flying saucers. They're not. They're underwater. One of them is above water. We don't know what they are. Some people said they're gun emplacements, but no. When you see the one underwater and see how huge it is, you'll have to start questioning what this is really all about. And the Russians, the Soviets, kept these things secret and secure for over 60 years before they'd let anybody get near them. So there's something going on there, too, as well. All right, George Filer, step on in here. Give us your latest thoughts on what's going on.
Well, I've talked to a couple of people that claim that they were at the Philadelphia Naval Yard when that occurred.
Oh.
And also, they went on to say that we have that capability.
To make ships make ships invisible, or at least invisible to radar. Yeah, I believe that, sure. That's probably technology that's been around for a while.
One thing is that I became friendly with a colonel who wrote the book Environmental Space Sciences for the Air Force, which was taught at Air Force Academy. His name is Donald Carpenter, and he gave me the book that he wrote, and it was taught to the Air Force people. And it has a chapter in there about UFOs. And what's kind of interesting is that he implies that they're quite likely, you know, UFOs are real and so on. But he says, if you assume that they are real, and if they are in our skies, then much of our physics is no longer correct.
It's quite upsetting, and that, yes.
And that, various laws are probably not, any more really laws. Every action must have an equal and opposite reaction. There's one that's probably no longer in effect. Every particle in the universe attracts every other particle. Energy, mass, and momentum are conserved. No material body can have a speed as great as the speed of light in free space. And so on. That's, you deal with a whole bunch of laws that I believe are not true any longer. And scientists have to take that into consideration, that UFOs are here and they're real, and that much of our physics is therefore wrong unless they change it. And even Ben Richard Lockheed said that that's what they had to do, is change some of their physics in order to make these things work. And I think Bill is pointing this out to us.
Very good. Okay, Frank, comments from you.
Sure, I can imagine Bill going into these meetings with these packages with a room full of PhDs, presenting information that they must have been astounded, and he's there to describe to the best of his ability what it is that they're asking for them to do. And I also wanted to say that Bill creates such a poignant and vivid description of the frustration that must have gone on during the debriefing sessions.
Right.
Those guys must have gone through cases of whiskey.
Yeah, yeah. I was bringing that human aspect up, and he filled in the blanks perfectly. Yeah, it's a remarkable, remarkable story. All right, let's get back to our conversation with William Tompkins. I don't know if you got to see the final interview of John Northrop that I had. I gave to Frank. He was going to try and get it to you. I know you don't have a computer at home. You're smart. You still have a life.
I do have a computer, but I can use the internet, but I can't use email.
I got it.
I'm not allowed to do that.
Well, that's what I meant to say.
That's what I'm limited on.
So you were you able to look at the Northrop interview? Did you get that?
No, I guess I did not.
Okay, and, that's the flying wing. The flying wing interview. Yeah, very interesting to be sure. You know, we talked a lot about the Navy League and Medford. What became of that project, Bill? Is it still extant, or is it has it morphed into something else? What was the net accomplishment there?
Okay, I think the best answer to that is again to. Get a hold of Michael Salas' write-up on that whole thing up there, because he did a excellent study. He talked to many of the people that were there, they were still living. He confirmed that what was done there was really done there, and he has an excellent article. Essentially, one of the fellows that's still president of it was one of the fellows that I worked with a great deal of the time. And so there's some areas there which are still sort of up in the air. Yes, there's still some studies going, but I guess when I had to pick up this thing down here with the Navy in San Diego, I had to leave and come down here to do it. And so I separated from it completely, but Michael did a study. Michael Salas, Dr. Salas, did a study on that thing. I gave him some good references. And wow, he wrote an article. Everybody's got to read it. It's unbelievable. It's out on the internet.
Right, I ran it. I ran it here. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
You're right.
And one of the things that's like not answered is the county commissioner,
Rick Holt.
Rick Holt. But you have to visualize that. I had about 170 people in that council, starting from scratch, and over half of these were retired naval officers, many of them pilots, okay? And they have their own business, their own airplanes, and they fly all over this place here. But I had many, like I had the airport manager. He's in the organization. I had the county commissioner, and I had the mayor, and all these people were in this crazy Navy League Council thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Holt, has a reputation. This guy was the county commissioner, and he didn't call in sick. He just left, and he'd be gone for 3 weeks. And, of course, he had meetings he was supposed to attend that he didn't attend. He had functions that needed to be, documents needed to be put together. And so he was continually in trouble in his job because of his relationship with another member of the family. Now, I think Frank is going to tell you the name of the other member of the family. Frank? Oh, I guess I don't have Frank.
Oh, he's there.
Okay.
Now, the other member of the family, meaning?
Meaning the, I'm trying to get his name out. Meaning the governor and the head of National Defense.
You're talking about Barry Goldwater and the relation there with,
And that's like the brother, okay? And so...
Well, Barry Goldwater's wife was married to Rick Holt. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yes. There are two sons involved from that wedding, at least, that marriage. And
but
anyway.
That family was extremely close, okay? And so...
would you say that Rick Holt was your best friend for a length of time? Were you guys really close?
Yes, very close. And he was the one that actually contacted us, the Navy League, and we were invited to that mountaintop.
That strange hunting lodge dinner at the mountaintop.
Crazy. And that's actually fairly close to where you might be. Anyway,
well, Rick Holt's house is about... as the crow flies, half a mile away from me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But I'm just saying that there were so many people who were in principal positions in Southern Oregon that were in this Navy League Council. And so Rick Holt's relative there, is involved in virtually everything at the highest level in Department of Defense. And so he's very involved with naval space admirals. And he's very involved with extraterrestrial research all over the country in the different organizations that many of the packages went to. And so he then... instigates this bringing of the corporate group of the council to this mountain for us to be briefed by some nice gentlemen who turn out to be all extraterrestrial Nordic types.
Well, that was an amazing story that you told. You can hear that in our last visit.
Yeah, and so what I'm trying to say is that... one of the photographs that we acquired through Rick Holt, I've also found that one of the people in the Navy League, or the MUFON group here in San Diego, also has the photograph. And I want to talk about it, because anybody that has a copy of a photograph showing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 extraterrestrial gentlemen here laying on portable racks that they use in hospitals to move people around. But this is in the morgue. And these fellows are all nude and supposedly were the fellows that were crashed in the Roswell crashes of the two vehicles. But this photograph is showing different extraterrestrials. Now, these fellas, they still have the blood all over them. The man that's you're facing, the feet of these five extraterrestrials, they're laying on their back. The relationship of the head to the body is exactly the same as humans, okay? But the fellow that's closest to you, his left foot only has three toes. Now the fellow next to him, the second fellow over, you can see his three toes too, but oh my gosh, look at his right foot, because it isn't there. There's a big, sloppy, bloody stump where the foot used to be. It's gone in the accident of the crash, wherever this was taken from. And so you keep looking across at this, at each one of these fellas, and these are not little grays, which is what we were supposed to, we were told that ended up in the crashes.
At Roswell. So what you're saying, let me, hold on. What you're saying here is that there may have been some misdirection in the Roswell crash victims, and these victims were the real victims, but they're not grays. What are they?
And or they may be from a different crash.
Okay? Well, there have been lots
because
of crashes.
We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these fellows here. And they're proportioned to virtually everything on their body is just like humans.
They could pass.
There's another picture, and it shows the face of one of these fellas.
Right.
And the same amount of redness from the X blood being on them and being dead people, being badly hurt in the crash, is in this other photograph. And it, the one fellow has a head exactly like you would have, or we would have, has, yes, a long neck, but certainly not the shape of a gray at all.
He could pass. If he were dressed in human clothing, he could pass. That's what you're saying.
He could nearly pass. The thing that would stop you is that his neck is a little bit longer and a little narrower. But other than that, he has smaller eyes, maybe a little bit larger than ours, definitely different from us. I think he might be recognizable.
So that's where that expression came from then, right? Pencil neck.
Yes.
I got it. I'm making a joke here.
Yeah, you had to put that in, okay? But I want to go on here for a minute because the ears on these fellas are much smaller than ours, okay? But it's still an ear. The eyes have a quite large blob below the eye itself. But other than that, the eye is only 20% larger than ours. Now, the nose is shaped like ours, except you see a little more of the nostril. Now, I'm describing these guys who have been killed in some sort of a crash, but these are real extraterrestrials.
Right.
And frankly, of course, what I'm asking anybody in the audience, hey, guys and girls, who are these fellas, and where did they come from? Anybody that's got any information, try to get a hold of Jeff and see if we could find out what's going on here.
Well, what we need to do is have somebody email me that those photographs, Bill.
Okay, I'll have that done. I will have that done.
Yeah, and I'll put those in your special feature box and solicit any input from folks who can help, maybe identify them. As far as crashes go, there are, the last I heard, there were well over 50 known purported crashes of extraterrestrial vehicles on this planet. Maybe closer to 75, I believe. So over the years, there are a lot of dead folks in those, dead people.
Yes, which brings up another question. If we didn't shoot them down, why are they having so much trouble with their vehicles here?
Exactly.
And this is a very interesting question. Yes, I'm sure there is no question that our fighters have shot some of them down. We have done that. And some of them have crashed because of possible weather conditions. But, gee whiz, they are from another part of this galaxy, people. And they should know what our environment is here. If there's lightning, they ought to know they shouldn't be going through the lightning. They shouldn't be crashing on their own.
No, something brought a lot of these things down, and from different planets, different cultures, different extraterrestrial beings, different technologies, and they have crashed. Now, that would suggest several things, one of which might be that there are so many of them here that just the law of averages over time, they're going to be screw-ups. Maybe they're more human than we think. I don't know. We do know that Frank Ficino wrote the book, Shoot Them Down, dealing with 1953-54 in the U.S., when the military was instructed to go after them and shoot them down. Unfortunately for us, we lost hundreds of aircraft and hundreds of air crew because we were no match for them. In 55 or thereabout, the government, the Air Force, handed out a new set of criteria, instructions, that they shouldn't be shot at. They should be photographs. So they took off the guns and put in gun cameras and began to photograph and film them. And that's when the losses of aircraft stopped. I've forgotten how many George may know. I think he's written about this. But we lost hundreds of airplanes over the U.S., to UFOs in the 1953-54 era. It's in the book Shoot Them Down by Frank Ficino. Fascinating book.
Extremely so. Now, I'm also going to include one other photograph that I'll send you, Jeff.
Okay.
And this is a photograph, and it's in color. Oh, incidentally, the ones I spoke about are all color, so it's you're really getting a good view of these people.
Mm-hmm.
This one is in color also. On the left-hand side is the shoulder of a man. The side of his head, his ear, part of his collar. On the other side, down at the bottom, is the windshield of an automobile. Okay? And it looks like the car is white, and it's got a regular windshield streamline. Okay, now in the middle of the picture, which is not what the photographer was taking, somehow he was trying to take the picture of the man on the left, and his camera didn't do it right. So in the middle is a extraterrestrial gentleman, and he has the same neck as the one I just described. And the difference with him is, and so his proportions are not quite as good. They're a little thinner. But he has this head, which is slightly larger, a little longer neck, but his chin sticks down, and his nose sticks down, and the eyes are smaller, and they stick up and curve back.
Hmm.
And this guy has both of his arms like he was going to holding something. So they're bent back. The object isn't there, but like it, he appears to be stepping. And this is quite clear. So what we have here, and there's a number of other photographs in this group that I was able to acquire, was sent to me, and asking me for identification. And so I have a number of photographs of and in color, of different extraterrestrial people. Like one shows a photograph of a fence, a picket fence, right in the front.
Hmm.
which is all lit up with some sort of a bright light coming from behind the camera. Mm-hmm. So it could be the headlights of a car, but it's a bright light. And then here are these two extraterrestrial guys, and they're sort of silhouetted in a yellow-orange color, solid color. And they're both turning. And they had one arm up, and they're turning. They thought somebody saw them or something. But it's extremely clear.
Huh.
Now, the point I'm getting to is here, and this is for the audience. So many of us think of extraterrestrials as being somebody from out there, that they only come here from some other planet, and they look and they
far, meet. Far away, right.
And they're in caverns underneath the ground, and sometimes they come up here and talk to
us. And they've lived here since before we did, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, right. But for everybody listening, we have some of these extraterrestrials who look exactly like us, and you can see them in the malls all over this country, probably all over your planet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a camera and you're taking a picture of some people standing in front of a building or something, you may find that your camera's film showed an extraterrestrial that you could not see. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't see that guy standing there.
Same thing works with digital photography, not just film. It'll work with digital as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And all I'm saying is we got a whole bunch of people here from outer space, and they're all over the planet. They're accomplishing their mission. Some people are just in massive size 20-kilometer-long spacecraft cruisers, like a cruise ship, and they're cruising the galaxy, and they got their kids with them. The grandkids are with the children.
How did you learn about this rather casual tourist configuration of these visits? Is this just common knowledge, or did someone tell you that knows?
Actually, both. It is quite common knowledge, and it is part of what is, it's your life out there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the points on that particular part is that there are hundreds and thousands of cruise ships, space cruise ships, massive things, that are out flying through the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking the graduate students from the university, which incidentally, some extraterrestrial people can be born and be knowledgeable with a university-level degree by 9 years old, 8 years old, and they can, their mind gives them capability, which we're not using, of unbelievable fast living to where they become professional people out in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them work with Lockheed in Burbank, and they are not advising Lockheed, but they will work with some of the Lockheed people, make suggestions, but they're accomplishing their own agenda here in a real nice facility that was dug out for them. Their families are here. The kids are here. And they work for Lockheed. And they're right here. And, gosh, there is so much that we're not talking about in front of the children.
When Go ahead, finish up. I got a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay, I'm just saying, come on, let's get with the program. Let's start talking. Let's everybody that knows anything about this talk to their friends.
They can talk here. Sure.
Talk to Jeff. Open this thing up.
In other words, don't take it with you, folks.
Yeah,
let's share it.
Yeah.
It's our birthright to know all this.
Yeah, and I hate to make this thing sound so simple, but gosh, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, people. And incidentally, one of the things that came out of TRW Space Systems, One Space Park, Redondo Beach, California. Okay, this is where they have all of these laboratories and sub-labs, thousands of them. And essentially, the company was given unlimited funds to study anything. But one of the things that came out of that, I think, is extremely interesting, because the establishment was that we were really only using 2.3% of our brain tissues. And there's different numbers that are out. Everybody says they're only using half or whatever.
Right.
But the number turned out to be 2.3%.
Really?
That's
pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, embarrassing. But they came up with a conclusion that our brains had fantastic capabilities, unbelievable capabilities, okay? I don't want to get way off on this, but it's an unbelievable thing.
Well, if we're using 3%, my goodness, 97% is, yeah, sure, that's almost a supercomputer sitting there not used.
Yeah, and so, but we have these extraterrestrial tankers who are dropping, you know, the four gases. And we have photographs of these vehicles flying at 3 feet, halfway between Oceanside and Carlsbad here in California. And the one photograph shows five of them, and it's close-ups of several of those. And you can see the windows in the top for the gases, and these serrated sides and the serrated roofs. It's not a good supersonic vehicle, but it accomplishes a mission. But the thing is that they're dropping four types of gases on us. One of the gases takes all of the guys, and it gets them all tied up into baseball and not get involved in technical things. The girls are supposed to continually look at the soap operas.
Wait a minute. Are you saying some ETs are playing baseball here, Major League Baseball?
No. They're getting you to play baseball because technically you're not going to learn anything.
Oh, it's okay. A diversion. Okay.
And so the girls have to do the soap operas thing. Now, the second guess was a little different. Incidentally, I didn't take the photograph. I know the people that took the photograph. I borrowed the negative. I took it to Northrop right here, and Northrop did a whole box full of studies on the photograph.
Wow.
And they have some that are similar, but not like this. And so they built a 6-foot model of this shape,
mm-hmm.
wooden model. They ran up to Hawthorne up in Los Angeles, the old Northrop facility, and they stuck it in a slow-speed wind tunnel. Wow. The serrations, not so good for real high speed, but boy, did it cover up the gases as they came out. Wow.
Now, where are the gases, Bill, excuse me, where are the gases being emitted What is the source of it again?
They're coming right out of the back of the vehicle. They're coming right out of the back of the vehicle in all four of the colors, and you cannot cover it up. Okay?
So we're being sprayed by E.T. Or is this a human project?
Yeah, but when the studies were made, the second gas, I'm never going to tell you the other two, but I will tell you the second, and it's important. The second gas will take your organs, your bones, and your flesh, and not let it operate very long, sir.
Well, it's talking about genocide here.
Wait a minute. What did we just say here?
Mm-hmm.
It says they're dropping gases on us, which is preventing our lifespan. If we can accept the possibility that Nordic extraterrestrials who look exactly like us and have the same equipment,
mm-hmm.
okay, little different, couples difference, but pretty much exactly as us,
mm-hmm.
live for 1,900 to 2,200 comparable years. Okay, now what did we just say a few minutes ago here? We said that extraterrestrials have these tankers. They're only about 80 feet long, 90 feet.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They operate at 300 feet in between the hills. Okay? You've got an absolutely unbelievable photograph of these. Nobody's making this up. This is not a made-up photograph, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so the Northrop studies find out what the gases are. Don't ask me analyze this to do it. But
all right, let me back up, if I may, Bill. The gases are the ET craft emitting four gases, which show up in photographs, apparently different colors. One of the gases dumbs humankind down. Sports, TV, meaningless pursuits. The second gas shortens our lives to approximately where we expect to live now, 60 to 80, somewhere in there. In other words, our lives are being shortened. This is slow burn genocide is what it is, obviously. And then there are two other gases now are these Nordics that are dropping the gas on us?
No, these are definitely not Nordics.
I wouldn't think so.
They're obviously
reptilians.
People who are controlling us.
Yeah, okay. All right, so they're keeping our lives shortened. There is also talk among the global elite that 80% to 90% of the world population is useless and needs to be removed from the planet. That's their plan. This has been written about, talked about. It would sound like, from what you're saying, that there may be some collusion with somebody to prepare us for a massive population reduction.
I certainly hope that that's not going to be done, okay? But yes, I hear what you're saying. But the thing that bothers me here is that if we could accept what some people are saying, that the Nordic types, which we are a part of, and there may be now as many as 900 different humanoid types. Some of them get almost to tall gray, but they're humanoid types, okay? So a lot of them are very close to us, and some of them are exactly like us, okay? And these guys all have the other end of the spectrum, or maybe the Dracos come involved. They're controlling your planet and have been for thousands of years. So they control the alumni and your language and your history, which is all lies. But these other fellows, the Nordic type, they are supposedly trying to help us here.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
And so all I'm trying to bring up here is that there is a lot of things going on that we're not addressing.
Massive amounts of things, yeah.
Yes, massive, not just a little bit. And we need to get more involved. And what you're doing with the program is you're getting the information out, and we're hoping that some portion of this, of the people, accept what's being said and get interested enough to ask questions, look stuff up, get on the internet, ask questions, even read some books on the subject. I talked to one fellow this morning that has 300 books. Yeah, he's got a PhD. He and I spent the whole morning today, brilliant, on extraterrestrial. But they're foreign few. He's in MUFON here. He's sort of running it. But I'm only saying that we need more people to get involved, and we need more people to say what happened that have been in the so-called programs. We need it.
Well, there aren't many, and you're right. They're supposedly mentally scrubbed, a lot of them. They don't remember. There's that. And there's the threat issue. Well, you love your family, you don't talk. That's what they used during the Roswell days, basically, to try to intimidate people. So we've come a long way. That picture in Men in Black of the flash device, which erases memory or short-term memory, that technology exists. It's there.
I'm sorry to say, but you're absolutely correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Now, we have about 7 minutes left, Bill, and I don't know where we needed to go. We didn't get to tonight, but let me bring George and Frank in here and get their comments and input now. All right, Major Filer, you're on.
Well, that's pretty startling information. A lot of people listen to sports and watch TV. I don't know if they're causing us to do it or not. But,
I don't. I didn't breathe that gas.
That is rather amazing information.
You know, we also have, George, the story of chemtrails, speaking of being sprayed with things.
Well, that's true, too, as well.
And that's another big issue.
There's something coming out of a lot of aircraft that seems not normal, let's put it that way.
See, George was a bug. George flew for years and years and years in the Air Force, and he knows that contrails and chemtrails are two totally different things. They're not the same. Contrails dissipate quickly. Chemtrails don't dissipate at all. They just spread out. So, yeah.
Well, they seem to spread out and essentially make clouds.
That's right. Not even clouds, just overcast. It's
overcast that
murky.
Allegedly are blocking out the sun to help the...
Yeah, that goes back to Edward Teller.
Solar warming and all that. You know, it's difficult to prove one way or the other, but I have seen...
I would suggest there are all kinds of things that they're doing with lots of different... applications using aircraft to vector and deliver the goods. It's too easy.
The fuel has been changed, and it may be, I was told it was because of the difference in the fuel. But I don't know.
Well, I've heard that too, but I watched these, the X's begin to appear in 1996. I remember the year. I didn't believe it until then. And then I began watching, and you don't just change jet fuel to the extent that a big three-engine or twin-engine jet flies over at 10,000 feet, leaving what looks like cotton candy behind it. It doesn't dissipate. It slowly just spreads out. I watched that, and I said, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. And that was 1996.
Yeah, normally you'd have to get up to, I don't know,
20,000. This was low. Might have been 15,000, maybe. I doubt it was more like 10,000. 2 miles up.
The lower it is, the more suspicious it is.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this is good. All right. Frank, what do you have to say about all this tonight, our latest conversation with Bill? Remarkable insights. Yeah, remarkable insights into the spies, the operatives, how the human element, just so many things. Yeah.
Jeff, I mentioned to Bill probably about a week or so ago that somebody's posting YouTube clips of discs that are flying in and around the chemtrails, shooting lasers at them, maybe in an attempt to neutralize them.
I don't know. I've seen that too. They're little black dots kind of paralleling chemtrails. Sometimes there's no aircraft visible at all. Some are suggesting that some of the aircraft that look like aircraft that are spraying chemtrails are in fact not aircraft. They're discs. They're being made to look like aircraft. I don't have answers.
The footage that I saw looked like discs. The footage I saw looked like discs shooting out lasers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send that to you.
Anything's possible. I'd like to see it. Thank you. This whole thing, by the way, you can find the Dr. Michael Sala story that Bill mentioned about the Navy League and the work that was done in Medford, Oregon. If you just go down to his box and look toward the bottom of it, and let me find the exact title for you. Is that Bill Tompkins? It is at the bottom of the Bill Tompkins featured story box on the right-hand side. Look for the green text block, exclusive UFOET disclosure section. Listen to these radio programs below. William Tompkins. Go down to the bottom of that grouping and you'll see Michael Sala on Tompkins and the Navy League ET Special Projects in Medford, Oregon, 1985 to 1999. And that paper is up there right now. So you can click on that and read it. And it's very interesting, as Bill said. Okay, Frank, one final comment tonight.
Well, Jeff, I just wanted to ask you, since you live in Medford, and that's not too big of a town, have you noticed any unusual activity yourself or perhaps seen people that you thought may be visitors?
I see people all the time I think are visitors. I don't. <They're, laughs> humankind is morphing all. There are some very strange-looking people out there. Who knows? I did see one on the streets in Santa Barbara, no question. Little pencil neck kid, looked like he was about 10, 11, 12 years old. It's quite a story, and that's the only one I would really say that I was convinced was not a normal human at all. Is the bridge of his nose.
Nothing unusual in Medford?
I don't get out much. I work all the time. The kid's nose, the bridge of his nose, the top of his nose, didn't end between his eyes. It ended halfway up his forehead. That was another giveaway. Right. Something wrong there. Little thin mouth, anyway. Okay, I'll tell you about that story sometime. Now, this has been another phenomenal evening. George, a final word from you?
Well, you can read more about it both at your site and mine, National UFO Center, that we're trying to keep up with all these revelations that are coming through.
Right, yeah. Also, at the bottom of Bill Tompkins' box, I have the Michael Sala article, and above that are pictures that Frank sent me of NASA director Dr. Kurt Debus, the director of the Peenemünde operation, where Peenemünde was largely underground. Most of it was underground. Pictures of Debus, Wernher von Braun, and JFK. Just remarkable of photos to look at. Flying disc, German flying disc pictures. A lot of fascinating material there. So thank you very much, George, and thank you, Frank, both of you.
You're welcome, Jeff. You're welcome.
All right.
You're welcome.
George, we'll talk soon. Bill Tompkins, you want to add anything here in closing tonight?
Just that the area that you're trying to cover, I think, is tremendously important, and you're getting the information out, but please, audience, you fellows that, and you girls too, that have been in this this subject, don't just sit back. Let us know what you know, because it is extremely important, far more than you can possibly believe. We need this help, and we need to expose what's happened.
It's time. We can't wait for the government to decide to let us know what we have a right to know. And so, yeah, hopefully some people will step forward. Thank you very much, Bill. Great to talk to you again. We'll do it again soon.
Very good. And thank you very much for the program.
Okay, you're welcome. We'll talk. All right. And that's our program tonight, Tuesday. Tomorrow is Wednesday. Have a good night. Have a good day tomorrow. And we will talk tomorrow night.